Good morning and welcome to the AJ Morning Report. This program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. It's Monday, June 15th, 2026, and for the next half hour, we'll be bringing you news from the Worcester TNG along with other local news services. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Mass Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. This is Harry Duchesne along with Bill Ruggiero coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And now on the line is Bill with the weather. Good morning, Bill. Happy Monday.
Good morning, Harry, and happy Monday to you, too. Welcome back from your vacation, and welcome to take a look at your weather, latest weather forecast. For today, we have got nice weather, cooler temperatures, and the mid-70s. Tonight, we go down into the 60s, except upper 50s in the outer urban suburbs. It's supposed to be a little chilly tonight. And then tomorrow, it's going to be a nice one. Temperatures up near 80, and we do have a chance of showers and thunderstorms Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday with impressive heat and humidity. And then Saturday, we look nice. Sunday, not look nice. It's going to rain on Sunday with showers, and thunderstorms will continue on Sunday. So a mixed bag for this weekend, and now back to you, Harry.
Well, thank you very much, Bill. And now for our national forecast summary. Drenching thunderstorms will bring much-needed rainfall to the southeast today. A few showers will dot New England, though it will largely be dry and pleasant. It will be hot on the West Coast. All right, Bill, as always, thank you so much for providing the weather for us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and welcome back, Harry. We missed you.
Thank you very much. I missed everyone here, too. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye. All right, let's get right to the news at the top of the fold from today's front page for Monday, June 15th. Iran questions U.S. commitment to peace. Tehran decries Israel's attacks on Lebanon. This story comes to us by Reuters. Iran's top negotiator questioned the U.S.'s commitment to peace efforts after Israel carried out new attacks on Lebanon, dimming prospects of Tehran and Washington signing a framework agreement on June 14th on ending their war. President Donald Trump and mediator Pakistan said on June 13th that they expected the deal would be signed the next day, but Tehran cast doubt over the timing and hardline protesters in Iran voiced opposition. Qatari negotiators flew to Tehran on the morning of June 14th as part of an effort to finalize the agreement, a source with knowledge of the situation told Reuters. But Iranian negotiator Mohammad Baghar Ghalibaf said Israel's June 14th attack on the southern suburbs of Beirut, which Israel said targeted Iranian-backed Hezbollah militants, showed the U.S. lacked the will or ability to fulfill its commitments. If you lack the will and ability to fulfill your commitments, speaking of continuing the path is not possible, he wrote on X, in an apparent reference to peace moves. Mohammad Jafar Asadi, deputy commander of Iran's top joint military command, was quoted by state media as saying Israeli crimes in Beirut's southern suburbs would not go unanswered. In more local news, making the climb. City firefighters recruits get real-world feel in training. This story is by Kinga Burundi. Week one, day one in the field. After all the paperwork has been completed, the recruits attending the Worcester Fire Academy start to learn how to breathe. It's the most important thing that we do, said Assistant Chief Adam Roach, referring to the first crucial lesson of the 14-week training program that prepares recruits to take the state certification exams, Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2. calling the mask and air tank the self-enclosed breathing apparatus, or SCBA, the barrier between life and death, Roach said. Every drill and evolution the recruits practice will be in full gear. Challenging not just because of the added bulk, weighing between 65 and 75 pounds, but because they must learn how to breathe bottled air and work with a mask on. Our next story, trustee alleges more than 4 million concealed by Norton. This story is by Brad Patrician. Longtime Worcester developer Charles Chip Norton routed more than $4 million from entities he controlled through an undisclosed personal account and transferred money from there to family members, a federal watchdog alleges, in a filing seeking to block him from discharging his debts. The transfers to family, totaling about $1.19 million, are among multiple transactions, entities, or accounts the U.S. trustee alleges Norton knowingly and fraudulently concealed in connection with his Chapter 7 bankruptcy proceeding. The U.S. trustee requests that the court enter orders denying the defendant's discharge. William K. Harrington, the federal watchdog for bankruptcies in the New England region, wrote on June 4th. Harrington, one of 21 U.S. trustees at the Department of Justice who oversee bankruptcies, alleges in the filing that Norton should be denied discharge on five counts: concealing assets both before and after filing, making false statements under oath, failing to keep adequate records, and failing to explain a lot of assets. In another story, woman stabbed to death near Ararat Street, by Craig Simone. The fatal assault occurred about 3:30 Friday, June 12th on Sunrise Avenue, according to police. A woman was killed and two others were transported to a hospital with injuries. According to earlier scanner transmissions, a caller to police said his father was stabbing his mother. Detectives converged on Sunset Avenue in a neighborhood of off Ararat Street. There was activity at three addresses, 1719 and 21 Sunrise Avenue. By law, police are limited to the amount of information they can release about domestic cases. In an interview with the TNG, a man who lives at 21 Sunrise, Ryan Shepard, said an adult neighbor from 17 Sunrise ran to his house in a panic. Shepard said the man who lives with his parents told him his father was assaulting his mother. Shepard said he called the police. Eventually, the house at 21 Sunrise Avenue became part of the crime scene. And now it's time for Today in History. Today is June 15th. On this date in history, in the year 1215, King John of England signed the Magna Carta, Latin for the Great Charter, a peace agreement between him and rebellious liberty-seeking barons that didn't last. Pope Innocent III annulled the treaty before the First Barons' War. The treaty was revived multiple times and served as a model for colonists who drafted the U.S. Constitution. On this date in 1667, French doctor Jean-Baptiste Denis performed the first known blood transfusion. In 1775, the Continental Congress appointed General George Washington as commander-in-chief of the Continental Army. In 1776, nearly 3 weeks before the 4th of July, Delaware leaders voted to declare its independence from Britain and Pennsylvania in Newcastle, its future state capital. The date became known as Delaware's Separation Day. In 1804, New Hampshire became the 13th of the 17 states to ratify the 12th Amendment, giving it the 3/4 necessary to make it part of the U.S. Constitution. The amendment restructured U.S. presidential elections by adjusting the Electoral College to eliminate deadlocks. In 1836, Arkansas was admitted as the 25th state. The land was part of the 1803 Louisiana Purchase from France. In 1844, the U.S. Patent Office approved a patent for Charles Goodyear's vulcanized rubber, a combination of Indian rubber, sulfur, and white lead that was heat resistant. In 1864, U.S. Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton officially declared the former Arlington House estate belonging to Confederate General Robert E. Lee to become a national cemetery about a month after the first military burial there in Virginia. Arlington originally sat on 200 acres and grew to more than triple that size. In 1864, also in 1864, Congress approved a bill equalizing pay, arms, equipment, and medical services for black American troops. Congress also made the measure retroactive. And finally, in 1996, iconic American jazz singer Ella Fitzgerald died at 79. And now to the local section. Five of a kind, unsung heroes of public service, received 2026 Green Awards. This story is by Afton Pratt. The Worcester Regional Research Bureau hosted its annual Thomas Green Public Service Awards, celebrating the unsung heroes of public service, honoring five people who have provided exceptional support to central Massachusetts communities. The ceremony was held Thursday, June 11th at the DCU Center. The awards highlight municipal and school employees who provide outstanding and exemplary contributions to government and the community. The winners were selected by a panel that included T&G Executive Director Michael McDermott. The honorees for the night were Christina Connolly, Community Research Manager at the Worcester Public Library, Emily Glaubitz, Manager of Housing Projects at Central Mass Regional Planning Commission, Richard Gonzalez, Community Navigator and Recovery Coach at Worcester Health and Human Services, Kelsey Lamoureux, Assistant Director of Innovation Career Pathways at the Worcester Public Schools, and Sue Oberell, Parent Information Center Student Assignment Officers in the Worcester Public Schools. Counselor-at-Large Satya Bimitra, speaking at the ceremony on behalf of Mayor Joseph Petty, who could not attend, applauded each recipient for their achievements. Since 1988, these awards have highlighted the unsung heroes who dedicated their careers and personal lives to our communities, Mitra said. Award recipients were each introduced by a different member of the 2026 Thomas Green Award Committee. Up next, food chain to open in ex-Boston Market site. This story is by Rachel Gow. Wonder, a growing food hall chain that serves an array of different cuisines, is slotted to open in August at the location of the former Boston Market on Park Avenue. The quick service restaurant will occupy the 3,500 square foot building that used to house the Massachusetts-born rotisserie chicken chain before a dispute between the landlord and franchise owner shuttered the Worcester location in November. It was the last in the state. Wonder features menus from 20 to 30 distinct restaurants, allowing customers to mix and match their orders in accordance with each person's cravings, according to its website. There are more than 100 locations nationwide, and 11 in Massachusetts. The Worcester location at 14 Park Avenue will be the first in Worcester County. At Wonder, you can get a Bobby Flay steak dinner, a Marcus Samuelson fried chicken dinner, gourmet salads, pizzas, burgers, Italian, Mexican, and barbecue all under one order, said Dan Brennan, who spoke on behalf of the franchise at the License Commission meeting on Thursday, June 11th. Now it's time for the column, Then and Now. Harry's Restaurant, 285 Pleasant Street, Worcester. This story is by Mike Eflin. In late June 1952, Harry Solhan locked the door to his restaurant and reluctantly posted a notice on vacation until July 7th. Customers of Harry's Restaurant, 285 Pleasant Street, likely did a double take when they learned of the owner's getaway. Solhan didn't take a vacation in 25 years, but it was true. He had packed a family car for a trip to the mountains of New Hampshire and Vermont. Not since we opened up across the street in 1927 have we ever been closed for vacation, Solhan told a curious Worcester Telegram reporter. But this time I have to. My wife and son ganged up on me. Harry's Restaurant, shown in this week's then photo from September 1949, was in a row of stores that filled the Pleasant Street block between Sever and Fruit Streets. The block is now filled with Pleasant Tower Apartments, an eight-story building run by the Worcester Housing Authority. The building opened in 1971 after the buildings along Pleasant Street were wiped from the landscape. By then, Harry's Restaurant had closed. Solhan earnestly ran his store from 1927 to 1955. For the next decade, he opened Harry's Daily Bar in Holden. The block on Pleasant Street had several businesses over the years, among them Land and Seafoods, Pleasant Street Florist, and Bowler's Cafe. Har Motor Company was once based on the block at 265 Pleasant Street at Fruit Street. Over the years, the dealership expanded its footprint in the neighborhood, eventually buying the building that was home to Harry's Restaurant. After all structures were leveled, the apartment building took shape on Pleasant Street. At the time, it was called Pleasant Apartments. At one point, it was questioned if eight stories warranted such a label, and there was concern it might be confused with the Lincoln Park Towers and the Webster Square Tower. At some point, the word tower was embraced. And now it's time for the reading of today's obituaries for Monday, June 15th, 2026. Up first, Arthur K. Bonney, age 73, from Worcester, died on May 31st. Arrangements will be at the Mercadante Funeral Home and Chapel. That was Arthur K. Bonney, age 73, from Worcester. Up next, Faye Cluthier, age 78, from Worcester, died on June 6th. Arrangements will be at the Graham, Putnam, and Mahoney Funeral Parlors. That was Faye Cluthier, from Worcester. Madeline Grunbaum, age 78, from Worcester, died on June 6th. Arrangements will be at the Mercadante Funeral Home and Chapel. That was Madeline Grunbaum from Worcester. Next, James Hardiman, age 89, from Westboro, died on June 6th. Arrangements will be at the Pickering and Son Westboro Funeral Home. That was James Hardiman from Westboro. Linda Laverne, age 67, from Worcester, died on June 11th. Arrangements will be at the Mulhane Home for Funerals. That was Linda Laverne, age 67, from Worcester. Up next, Richard S. Mansfield, Jr., also known as Rick Mansfield, age 70, from Holden, died on June 10th. Arrangements will be at the Miles Funeral Home. That was Richard S. Mansfield, Jr., known as Rick, from Holden. And finally, Elizabeth Ann Van Ness, age 94, from Westboro, died on June 12th. Arrangements will be at the Athey Funeral Home. That was Elizabeth Ann Van Ness, also known as Betty. Our next story, analysis. More people visiting farmers markets. Consumers cite array of reasons for buying local. This story is by Brett Shaw from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. People who shop at the more than 8,700 farmers markets operating in the U.S., either year-round or seasonally, generally fall into six distinct groups. Three of them are more interested in farmers markets than the others. I study local food systems as a strategic communication scholar, and that's the main takeaway from a study that I conducted with several colleagues. As we explained in the March 26 edition of British Food Journal, people who fall into these groups have different levels of interest in farmers markets, but have some things in common. Most people who shop at them are motivated to go because they want healthy, fresh food. They support local farmers, and they think going to the farmers market is fun. This is not a niche activity. An earlier study I worked on found that 81% of U.S. adults said that they shop at farmers markets at least once a year. For both studies, we pulled survey data from a nationally representative sample of 5,141 U.S. consumers that was conducted in August of 23. It had a margin of error of plus or minus 1.8 percentage points. Researchers define farmers markets and local food in different ways. So we asked respondents to simply think of farmers markets as places where they can buy food directly from one vendor and where all or most of the items are locally grown, raised, or made. We define local food as being grown in their state or 250 miles or less from their homes. The next analysis, the Fed can do little about mortgage rates. Inflation is biggest factor in determining figures. This comes to us by Michael Highfield, Mississippi State University. U.S. home buyers can't get a break. The 30-year mortgage rate has been stuck at recent highs well above 6% and now averages 6.48%, according to data released on June 4th by Freddie Mac, which bundles and sells home loans. That marks another blow for Americans hoping to buy a home or refinance their current mortgage that had been locked in at similarly steep rates. Pricey mortgages have been weighing on the housing market more broadly, which has not escaped President Donald Trump. He has waged an aggressive campaign to pressure the Fed Reserve, which sets the short-term benchmark rate to make deeper cuts to the cost of borrowing. The new Fed chief, Kevin Warsh, has also been touting rate cuts since he was nominated, a reversal from his earlier anti-inflation stance. As a professor of finance, I have been asked why mortgage rates are rising even though the Fed has been keeping rates steady after a series of cuts in 24 and 25. The central bank actually has little control over the cost of home loans, and Americans may be stuck with high rates for a long time. The Fed directly influences the federal funds rate, a short-term interest rate that banks charge one another for overnight loans. Many people assume that mortgage rates move in lockstep with the Fed's decisions, but in fact, they're driven primarily by financial markets. 30-year mortgages are long-term assets, Investors purchasing those loans, either directly or through mortgage-backed securities, are making decisions based on what they believe inflation, economic growth, government borrowing, and interest rates will look like in the future. Inflation is one of the biggest factors affecting mortgage rates. Although inflation has declined from the peaks experienced in 22 and 23, investors remain uncertain about when it will return to the Fed's official long-term target of 2%, especially with elevated oil prices and the ongoing war with Iran. This uncertainty matters because lenders originate a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. They're committing capital for decades. If inflation turns out to be higher than expected, the payments lenders receive will be worth less in real purchasing power terms. To compensate for that risk, investors demand higher yields for the higher cost of borrowing. Federal government borrowing is another important factor. The long-term budget outlook by the independent scorekeeper Congressional Budget Office projects continuing large federal deficits and rising debt levels in the years ahead. It estimated that Trump's massive tax and immigration bill, passed by the Republican-controlled Congress in 2025, will actually add $3.4 trillion to federal deficits through 2034. Well, that wraps up the Morning Report for today. You've been listening to the AJ Morning Report, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
This is Bird Note. As the tides fall in Cape May, New Jersey, these American oyster catchers are living up to their name. The crow-sized shorebirds are mostly black and white, except for bright yellow eyes and a long orange bill. American oyster catchers are shellfish specialists that can be found foraging in intertidal zones along the U.S. Atlantic shoreline and both coasts of Central and South America. Their unmistakable bills allow them to smash up and scarf down oysters, clams, and other bivalves, attracting the attention of birders and mollusk-mooching seabirds. Sadly, researchers estimate that between 1970 and 2023, American oyster catchers lost roughly half their population to habitat degradation, human disturbance, and predation by mammals like coyotes, raccoons, and domestic cats. We can all do our part to conserve American oyster catchers by giving them space on shared beaches, keeping domestic pets indoors or on leash, and cutting fossil fuel emissions that drive climate change. You'll find more actions you can take to protect birds at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Rimmel. This episode is dedicated to Bob Goodale, whose lifelong love for birds and nature continues to inspire.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Building an inclusive workforce where individuals with disabilities are welcome is possible thanks to Mass Commission for the Blind. Partner with them to hire individuals who are blind or visually impaired and reach your workforce goals. The success of your organization depends on the diversity of your team. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450 or mass.gov/MCB.